Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. Today we're going to have kind of a two-part series with another PA by the name of Frank Norman, and he's going to introduce SPACIS to us in this podcast, and the next one will all be about how to incorporate ultrasound and ultrasound program into either the school you're in or the institution you're currently at. So without further ado, Frank, will you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chip. My name is Frank Norman. I'm a physician assistant working primarily in emergency medicine in Central Florida and a member of the Society of Physician Assistants in Clinical Ultrasound.
So let's go ahead and we're going to talk a little bit about SPACIS. And I think the first question is, what is SPACIS?
Well, SPACIS is really a society made up of physician assistants. It's multidisciplinary. So we take and accept and have input and members from really every specialty within where physician assistants practice and where they may actually use ultrasound.
And so what are some of the goals of SPACIS?
Well, the first thing obviously that we want to do is we want to promote ultrasound, not just in the classroom or in clinical practice, but really everywhere where PAs may be. The second real goal that we have is that we want to create a pathway to education and credentialing for PAs in every walk of life and every specialty. So whether you use ultrasound in your dermatology practice or you use ultrasound in your emergency medicine practice, we want to be able to help you to attain credentialing and incorporate that ultrasound. And really the third area that we tend to focus in on is that we want to promote that if PA education wants to continue in the traditional medical model of education, then we've got to incorporate ultrasound into PA education. And that's really from day one.
Great. And actually, I think that's an important point. So with ultrasound, I mean, we use it as modality and the two of us, we use ultrasound all the time, but why should we be using bedside ultrasound or point of care ultrasound in our daily practice?
Well, I think that's a good question. And the most obvious reason is that really it makes us better clinicians. It provides us immediate feedback and helps us to confirm our clinical suspicions that we have from getting a history or doing a physical exam and physically examining the external portions of the patients or the patient's the portion that we can actually see. Many times we don't have that immediate feedback as to actually what's sort of going on internally with that patient. And when we use ultrasound, it actually makes us better. It helps us to understand anatomy and physiology and really just sort of enhances our practice. I think the other reason that sometimes is overlooked is that it's probably the first thing that I can think of, at least in the last 30 years of medicine, that doesn't take us away from the bedside, but it actually brings us back to the bedside. I think there's clinicians everywhere sometimes frustrated by the amount of paperwork that you have to do or the amount of charting that you have to do or the time that you spent doing things that are not clinical things at the bedside. And ultrasound is a great way for you to get back there and be able to spend time with the patient to really investigate their problems in sort of a meaningful way.
That's a great point. And actually, I know some people out there, they're going to say, well, I can get most of the same answers from a CT or an x-ray. Why do I even need to bother with ultrasound then?
Well, there's a couple reasons for this, and forgive me if I get sidetracked here, but the first reason that I'll tell you is that CT and x-ray may not always be available. You are going to start reading in the next few years here that military units, when they deploy, they're no longer taking these large CT scanners or these x-ray connexes with them so that they can do their imaging on the battlefield or at the forward edge of wherever it is that they're deployed. They're simply taking an ultrasound, which is about the size of an iPhone, pulling it out of their pocket, and they can investigate many of the same things that you would be able to sort of see from either a CT scan or an x-ray. And some of those uses are really non-traditional uses for ultrasound, things like ultrasounding lungs to be able to find things like pneumonia and CHF or masses or looking for fractures with ultrasounds or fracture reduction. There's a lot of other uses there. I think another reason that sometimes is overlooked is the great experience that patients actually have when you use bedside ultrasound with them. There's been several studies that have shown that patients are more satisfied and patients have a greater sense of confidence in the skill and the ability and the final diagnosis that the provider may be able to provide them, because many times they're actually able to see and understand exactly what the provider has done for them right there at the bedside and see the pathology that they have. They can see their gallstones, they can see their abscess, they can see their pneumonia, and it is very helpful to for the learning process for patients also.
I think that last point's a really good one and one to branch off of for just a second. Like you said, the being able to see the diagnosis or sometimes the lack of a diagnosis, the patient thinks that they come in with an abscess. Of course, they hardly ever call an abscess. They call any number of other things, but they think that something has to be cut and drained. And when you can actually show them that this is all cellulitis, there's no pocket of pus or fluid that needs to come out, it totally changes their mindset a lot of times, I've noticed, where they're more accepting of that diagnosis because you can show them without having to cut them open and nothing happen and save that patient that pain from that experience and be able to have a little more education that goes with it. Another thing I've noticed too, you talk about access like in rural and remote areas or on the battlefield or those types of things, but I think another access point that's an issue is some patients are too unstable to actually make it to the CT scanner or to get to x-ray there, or you may want something so quick. Two examples that come to mind. The EFAS for the unstable patient or the rush exam for the unstable patient is a big one for emergency medicine. And the other type of exam is intubation, for example, confirming tube placement and watching it go into the trachea versus the esophagus, along with watching the lungs sliding before x-ray ever gets there to confirm the placement with a chest x-ray as well. I think that's a huge benefit. Those are two things that, you know, one being where I can't get the patient over because of their unstable nature. And then the other one being that this is something I can have right at the bedside, watch it literally as it happens. That dynamic ultrasound there is huge. So those are a couple other things I've noticed too.
Absolutely, Chip. And I will tell you that when you have precious seconds or minutes that are lost to really confirming line placement or endotracheal placement, or needle placement on a patient that's unstable, those minutes really, really mean a lot. And it's great being able to be able to get that confirmation immediately. And it's curious, I think, that many times we will call the test of choice when the ultrasound actually provides you a more accurate answer in a quicker manner. But we still refer to those sort of tests of choice. And like you said, ET tube placement with a chest x-ray, I think, is still the standard in many places. But I think in the coming years, we're going to start seeing some of that diffusion of information and education change some of those perceptions.
I couldn't agree with you more. You kind of mentioned it real briefly about how SPACIS is multidisciplinary. But who does SPACIS actually represent? Can you give some examples?
Sure. So emergency medicine tends to the great majority of the members of the society, but we've got members of the society in critical care, cardiology, OBGYN, dermatology, neurosurgery. We really represent just about every place where PAs are using ultrasound, and that includes a lot of faculty at this point.
So you mentioned all these great disciplines, and I know emergency medicine, what this podcast is more for is for the emergency medicine types, especially in rural remote areas. But what about PAs who are practicing in general? How can they learn ultrasound?
There's many ways that PAs can learn ultrasound, and some of them are fairly easy, some of them are quicker, but there are a bunch of courses that are really great courses that that over a week in time will give you sort of the general knowledge that you need to at least just get started. Also, maybe just another suggestion is really finding somebody who's your guru or your Yoda and just sort of latching onto them and just asking them to sort of lead you through the process so that you can learn it. There's also some fellowships that are available. The Army currently has a fellowship that allows PAs to learn ultrasound. And interestingly, there's some fellowships now that aren't in the traditional form of fellowship. Essentially, these fellowships are emergency rooms that already have PAs that are working for them, and they are allowing them, those PAs, to stay on with them and do their three shifts a week, let's say. But they also offer them over a year time frame, protected time, to be able to go through the normal ultrasound process. In other words, QA. They will learn most of the studies that the physicians learn. In fact, the PA ultrasound fellowships are no different other than name than the physician fellowships that are offered at the same institutions. And finally, there are some commercial products that are available that will help you to also learn ultrasound really at the bedside. But at the end of the day, I think really the hardest part of learning ultrasound is really going over and learning how to turn on the machine. Once you start becoming engaged with it and start with just sort of the simplest of applications, you'll quickly learn that it's a very easy process to learn. It's got a very easy learning curve to it, and it will absolutely make people better clinicians.
I'd like to mention that I have nothing to disclose. I have no financial interest in any of these. I assume, Frank, do you have any financials to disclose on any sort of ultrasound groups or anything?
I don't. I a medical director from the ULA, but I don't receive a penny from the ULA. In fact, I don't get paid from anybody other than the guy who pays my hourly wage at the emergency room.
So ULA was actually one I was just getting ready to mention. The Ultrasound Leadership Academy, I want to get involved with that, and I hope to sometime in the near future maybe get involved with that. But Ultrasound Leadership Academy, I know, is one big resource out there. Now, that one does cost. That one does have some a fee. Now, the two guys who are kind of two of the big leaders in it, or I guess it's now up to three guys, the Ultrasound Podcast crew, they have their resources. Those are all FOMED. That means they're all free and open access medical education. I also know that SIMPA now has ultrasound classes that they do, and they do like a crash course, basically a brief introduction, but they do a good job with the exams. And then heard about a place, the Canadians have kind of where you can do a mini fellowship with them. It's in Toronto and Montreal, I believe. Can you think of some other ultrasound courses that you may have that you would recommend, or at least say, hey, these are out there?
Sure. I would also recommend the first ultrasound course that I took was from a group that was called Third Rock, who they really do a great job traveling around the country and sort of offering, whether it's primary care based or whether it's emergency medicine based or procedures based. But it's a great group of individuals. They take their learning very seriously, but at the same time with a great sense of humor. So I really enjoyed the Third Rock course, but I went to the ULA just because I was looking for a little bit more in depth. And the ULA offered me essentially a fellowship of contacts. In other words, a circle of contacts that when other PAs are having problems getting credentialed or they're having problems with integrating into their curriculum, I can reach out to these leaders really within the ultrasound world with the amount of literature that they've written and influence that they've had over the profession, and be able to get some immediate feedback, whether we're on the right course or get some advice. So I think anything that you do to increase your skill with it is phenomenal. But at the end of the day, these things only get you started. What really makes you good, honestly, is just time with that ultrasound probe and just verifying sort of what you see in other studies is what does that look like on the ultrasound? And I think that's really, really helpful to learn.
I agree. That's one of those things that it's not until you actually start putting it on people and seeing what's normal and seeing what's abnormal that you're actually going to really figure it out. And that just takes time. I'm still learning things all the time with ultrasound. Now, you did mention something briefly, and I think we need to talk about this, is when it comes to ultrasound, how does certification differ from competency? Because that's always an issue that seems to come up.
That's a great question, and I think sometimes people are looking for a unique sort of set of parameters that are set from an outside agency that will tell you that you're quote unquote good to go, that you're able to sort of apply your ultrasound skills, and really that sort of street credibility is what people sometimes want to use to present to their credentialing committees or to their leadership to say, hey, we should be doing this. Competency, on the other hand, is the pathway that the American College of Emergency Physicians has established over the past 15 or 16 years when they first came out with their first set of guidelines in 2001. And essentially what they said is that those PAs wishing to learn, or those providers or physicians wishing to learn ultrasound, first they attend their didactic portion of their phase. It used to be defined anywhere between 16 to 24 hours. That's no longer a hard and fast definition. And then they go through an experiential phase where they actually perform those ultrasounds under proctored exams of one of three methods. So one of those three methods are they compare the results to a gold standard or a test of choice. They get a clinical outcomes. So if you think that you have an abscess there and you look at it with an ultrasound and it looks like an abscess and you put a knife in it and you get a bunch of pus, well, that's an acceptable standard that we use. And the final way is that you can have sort of, again, your Yoda or your guru sort of looking over your shoulder, watching you do those scans and giving you tips on how to do those. And once you have anywhere between 25 to 50 scans per application, that really should be enough to get everybody competent to be able to perform those. those ultrasounds. So that's really the main difference. So the difference between certification and competency really is in some of those merit badges that people will pursue. So if you enjoy having to take ACLS or every 2 years and PALS and NALS and all the BLS that comes with it every 2 years, and then on top of it, ATLS every 5 years, this will be an added certification that you're going to have to go through to maintain your credentials within ultrasound. Or you can choose to take the competency approach, which essentially you document the number of exams that you're doing and the circumstances under those exams, and it's part of your job. It's part of what you do.
So there's something that we briefly mentioned I think you would like to talk more about, because I know it's something that we've talked a little bit about before, but there is this difference that exists between certification and competency. Can you go into a little more detail and explain why we want to have one more than the other?
So competency is the process where ASEP, which is the American College of Emergency Physicians, has essentially some data over the past 15 years, and that that pathway was developed through their ultrasound guidelines that they first published in 2001. And essentially, the ASEP pathway states that the first thing that we have to do is you have to, as a provider who wishes to use ultrasound, you should gain sort of some of the didactic education by taking a course. It's typically anywhere between 16 to 24 hours over the applications that you want to take. Again, that greatly depends depending on what you want to do with the ultrasound. And then once you have that didactic education, you would return back to your institution or your home clinic or practice, and then go through an experiential phase. And essentially that experiential phase, you would need to have 25 to 50 scans in each application to gain competency. And that can be gained in one of three ways, really. The first way is to test your ultrasound scan, the results, against what would be considered the gold standard or the test of choice, to make sure that your findings are similar to the ultrasound. The second way would be to actually use clinical outcomes. So if you thought you had an abscess and did an ultrasound and found that you had an abscess, putting in a knife and doing an IND and getting a bunch of pus out would certainly confirm that your clinical suspicion and your ultrasound results were correct. And then the third method that you could use for this sort of competency phase is you could have sort of a guru or Yoda looking over your shoulder, providing you with sort of tips and tricks and walking you through each one of those experiential ultrasound scans. Certification, on the other hand, would be a test that you would need to take and retake every few years to show that you had attained a certain level of skill within ultrasound to be able to continue to use it or show to your credentialing board. There was a institution or a group that is attempting to create a certification test for PAs. SPACUS is not in favor of a certification-based approach for several reasons. The first reason is that PA practice is really varied. So no test is going to be able to qualify a person who's using this for, let's say, filling up a pain pump with somebody who's using it to assess volume status within a critically ill patient. It would be too difficult to do. The second reason is that by surrendering sort of or having an outside profession create a test for you is essentially surrendering the governance of the PA profession to an external profession, which may not have the best interests of your profession, best interests of your patients really at heart. And you lose control of the process that drives things like education and the things that really matter to creating a very sound program that's best for your patients and best for your profession.
I think that's a really good point, and I want to just briefly kind of hit an example or two for those who are maybe still trying to connect the dots or haven't been doing this yet in their own institution. When you talk about confirmation, you know, we talked about the abscess one. That's a good example. But when we're also talking about doing the gold standard, a classic example could be if you have a trauma patient, you do an EFAS exam, everything looks fine. You run them through the scanner, everything looks fine. Or you have a positive exam, but they're stable enough to wait till surgery. Or even if they do go to surgery, again, these are the gold standards that are appropriate for this patient. But especially if you have a positive EFAST, it doesn't look like it'd be something surgical because of how stable they are right now. They're okay to go to CT. And yes, on CT, they show a positive CT for the same. Again, these are good signs. These are things that would help reinforce that. And especially with those types of exams where there's a pretty yes-no answer in most cases, I think that's a good way to go, especially if you don't have, I think in some ways we'd maybe want the gold standard to be that Yoda or guru, like you say. I like the Yoda reference too, but having something like that out there would be great, but not everyone's going to have that, especially in these rural settings where you may be the only person even interested in ultrasound. So this may sometimes be a good way to go and help promote ultrasound in your community.
Absolutely. And there are, again, I hesitate to use the word gold standard because in many cases, ultrasound is a much better test for that particular pathology. So when we take the case of, for instance, a starting central line in the IJ, we're using ultrasound to be able to start that central line. The literature has clearly shown that ultrasound is a much better test to be able to find a pneumothorax than a patient who is lying supine on a backboard to take in a chest x-ray. But we still get a confirmatory chest x-ray to ensure that that the line is correctly placed and that that is where it's supposed to be. So there's nothing wrong with using that ultrasound to place the central line, then sliding that ultrasound down to look at, over the chest for chest wall to make sure that there's no pneumothorax, and even going a step further, moving it down over the subxiphoid area and looking for something called the right atrial swirl sign, and essentially just injecting some agitated saline in there to make sure that that the saline is actually running into the right atrium. And essentially in one procedure, you've gotten the experience of actually doing three different ultrasounds, which will help towards your total of the number of exams to gain your experience. And you're still going to get the chest x-ray until you feel comfortable enough, until it becomes a standard of care with line placement.
With all that said, I think we've kind of hit a bunch of the introduction to SPACIS and a lot of the background to it. Next podcast, like we talked about, is going to actually be talking about a little more about how to introduce all this stuff in our program, though we've kind of mentioned it briefly here. Frank, do you have any closing comments before we wait till next time?
I say let's wait until next time and go through some more stuff.
All right. So you heard it from him, folks. So in that case, Frank, can you give us the tagline?
Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.